Good evening and welcome, dear friends. Your presences are a blessing to all of us as we gather together with a shared intention in Christ. And our candle has been lit this evening, the Christ candle, reminding us always that Christ is with us, in us, through us, and through all. So we gather to listen and then to hear, to awake and to die, to self, yielding the self and reborn as the new. We know that our shared intention matters for ourselves, for those immediately around us, for all creation. May the Holy Spirit come to our assistance in our weakness. This evening's opening reflection comes from Burl Pogson. Burl Pogson was Maurice Nichols' secretary until his death in 1953. And after that, until her death, she held various work groups throughout England. And they were always called by their address. And this particular one was held at Nutley House, Nutley Terrace in England. And it was given on December 29th, 1959. This is from a talk that she gave. And, you know, long before Zoom and all the wonderful technologies that we had, there were people who sat and listened and transcribed as she was speaking and then gifted us with these works that have been handed down to us from person and to person until they reached us this evening, 61 years later almost. So it is a marvel. Here's what she had to say. From the passage of Plutarch that we read at lunch, we learned that those among men who had developed the fullness of their being were able to return and become intermediaries, messengers, and to help those who had come to the point of awakening and wished to return. They were interested in helping those who were seeking meaning and rebirth. This describes part of the work of conscious humanity. This is the work Dr. Nichol wanted to be able to do, to help invisibly through the mind. So this is the work that we are called to do, and it seems that Burl Pogson and Maurice Nichol are doing their work invisibly through us. So we once again are preparing ourselves to receive their work and their work as it evolves and comes to meet us in our day and time. We listen deeply and move into our inmost being, listening first to scripture and some of today's message. In order to receive knowledge, we are to listen deeply for the inmost parts of our being, to have our emotional center engaged, enlivened with the evaluation of what we're receiving, and having our bodies sense the truth and goodness of what is being offered, what is being sacrificed in order for us to receive what we are receiving, and then to manifest the Word made flesh in our own being. So join me in preparing our physical body aimed at alert, receptivity. So with back upright, a strong back, and heart wide open, we breathe in deeply, hold for a moment this gift of Christ's life evolving in ourselves for just a moment, and then we breathe it out, this healing goodness. May it permeate every cell of this earth. We hand over the complexities of the day, knowing that they are gifts handed to us. We hand over the plans for tomorrow, knowing that they will be addressed. We hand over the anxieties and small fears of our hearts, knowing that they are known by the one who can do something about them. I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me. I lay it down on my own. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. As always, I will share this reading on screen, and it will be read three times in the manner of Lectio Divina. And then there will be time for sharing what we received from this message. For now I see through a glass darkly, but then I shall know face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as I am known. Higher emotional and intellectual centers, timeless instruments of the soul. Higher emotional center is the seat of conscience and the organ of individuality. Higher intellectual center puts one in touch with cosmic principles. What is at a higher level perceives and comprehends what is at a lower level. But what is at a lower level cannot perceive or comprehend which is at a higher level. The work beautifully describes a universe created on the principle of scale, its energetic levels ranging from unimaginably fine in the upper parts of the ray of creation to profoundly dense in the lower parts. Blessed are those who hear, however quietly, for they will be helped, really helped. For now I see through a glass darkly, but then shall I know face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as I am known. Higher emotional and intellectual centers, timeless instruments of the soul. Higher emotional center is the seat of conscience and the organ of individuality. Higher intellectual center puts one in touch with cosmic principles. What is at a higher level perceives and comprehends what is at a lower level. But what is at a lower level cannot perceive or comprehend what is at a higher level. The work beautifully describes a universe created on the principle of scale, its energetic levels ranging from unimaginably fine in the upper parts of the ray of creation to profoundly dense in the lower parts. Blessed are those who hear, however quietly, for they will be helped, really helped. For now I see through a glass darkly, but then I know face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as I am known. Higher emotional and intellectual centers, timeless instruments of the soul. Higher emotional center is the seat of conscience and the organ of individuality. Higher intellectual center puts one in touch with cosmic principles. What is at a higher level perceives and comprehends what is at a lower level. But what is at a lower level cannot perceive or comprehend which is what is at a higher level. The work beautifully describes a universe created on the principle of scale, its energetic levels ranging from unimaginably fine in the upper parts of the ray of creation to profoundly dense in the lower parts. Blessed are those who hear, however quietly, for they will be helped, really helped. Amen. I invite you, as you are moved to do so, to share what you have received from these passages. Yes, Stuart, please.
Hi, good evening. The part about the lower does not understand the higher, does not comprehend, made me think of the way that I view eyes within me, or systems or networks of eyes, as neighborhoods. There's neighborhoods in the village of Stuart, and they have incomplete memories, I'm discovering, and they don't understand any bigger pictures. And they take life as an end instead of as a means to the end. And they're not my friends. So it's good when they're running the show, that is. Otherwise, they're necessary parts of my being. But they don't know the whole truth. They just know very fragmented parts.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you. Anna, please.
Hi, everyone. What caught my attention during your reading is higher emotional center is the seat of conscience. And puzzling or a wondering for me would be, and the organ of individuality. The organ of individuality. For me, conscience, as explained to me, is feeling all together, but yet here it says, and the organ of individuality is quite puzzling. Perhaps that's where the magnetic center lies in me. Just a wondering. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you. Jan, please.
Here it says, now it says unmute. The last part of what you read, Marianne, mm-hmm. said something about listening quietly, or I forget exactly how it was said. But I'm also reading one of Beryl Pogson's books, and she was talking about the difference between acquired conscience and real conscience. She asked the questions and somebody answers, and she was asking if somebody could give an example of what's the difference. And the example somebody gave was that real conscience just says something quietly and gently. Mm. And the example was like, that's in you also. And I like that.
Yes. Thank you. Rebecca, please.
Can you unmute yourself, Rebecca?
I'm sorry, y'all.
There you go.
What I heard is those who hear will be helped. And I'm reminded that the more I am unidentified, the more I have access to truly hearing guidance that will profoundly lead me in the directions I really want to go.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you. Leanne, please.
I saw the image, and in the image, I saw the colors, and the colors were in the exact sequencing as on a color wheel. And so that indicated me to me an order. And I know that there is some other meaning and reason behind that, that I'm unaware of, a scientific reason, but just knowing that there is an order to it, made me also think of what I also saw in that image was binoculars. And so with binoculars, you're able to see more clearly, more distinctly, larger. You can see things close up. I also saw the eyes of an owl in that image. A friend of mine had sent me a picture of an owl. And so I saw these images, and they really indicated to me that with the work and all of its teachings, how we are able to see more clearly, to know that there is an order, and that we, if we pay attention, if we're receptive, aware, and always watching, there is just so much order and beauty and meaning everywhere, all around us, signals that are being sent to us. And our opportunity is to be open to looking for them. And so my prayer is that I can remain receptive and open to what is probably being sent to me, emitted to me every moment, and I just don't see most of it or hear most of it. So just to be open and receptive.
Thank you, Leanne. Thank you. Catherine, please.
Hi, Marian.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I heard two things. The first thing I heard was the lower parts of sinners don't hear the higher parts. And then I thought of David Hawkins' scale of emotions or chart of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought shame has no idea what enlightenment is. No idea. But enlightenment knows what shame is, and it doesn't really care to go down there. And then the other thing I heard was at the very end, like Rebecca, those that have ears that hear, even quietly hear.
Yes.
And I really have a deep wish to have ears that hear and eyes that see. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll... Gay, you'll be our last one. Thank you.
The first thing I heard was the lower cannot understand the higher. The higher can understand the lower. So that that reminded me of my time body and looking back as through like a telescope all the way back to my beginnings, the first part of my life that I can remember, all the way up until the time where the work met me. And beginning at that point, remembering what it was like studying the work, feeling a bit overwhelmed, not a bit overwhelmed, really overwhelmed with the seemingly endless concepts, vocabulary, ideas, So as I look at it now, I can see that there's been this like an opening, as in that image, each circle getting larger. And I can understand the state of that woman those years ago. And what I also know that the state that I'm in at this moment is far from being what might happen. So this time body idea for me has been very comforting, very clear, actually. Nothing has been wasted. There was always help. There was help then, there's help now. So I think that's all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gay. And thank you to each of you. Such rich sharing, such a blessing for us. So we'll take what we have received and the openness that it prompted. And tonight, we're going to move into the upper stories of our house and get a glimpse into some of those treasures and mysteries. And our shepherd this evening is Beverly McCune, and I am very pleased to introduce Beverly, who is going to take us on this journey of discovery. So welcome to you, Beverly.
There we go. Thank you. Thanks, Marianne. I'm trying to get my thing off. There we go. Hi, everybody. It's wonderful to be here with you. That was such rich sharing. It was a lot of what we were going to talk about in the next part, but oh well, we'll see what happens. There must be more to come. So last week, Peter gave us this wonderful historical survey of how the centers, the idea of centers came to be. And I found it really fascinating and very helpful. And it just shows how we as humans really try to put concepts and words on things that really are not describable. The words always fall short, but it's what we do. And you can see over time how understanding expands and how we can evolve all of this and how it is just all evolving. So it's wonderful to ponder and imagine how we might move into the future with all of these ideas, that they are organic and they evolve just like we are. Some take longer, sometimes it's fast. So I will go ahead and share the screen for the homework. Okay. Here we go. And so what we were to do was, or what was recommended or offered, was that if we are new to the work and to the ideas and diagrams of the centers, to work on the side of knowledge and to take some time to read some of the commentary references in the email and study those wonderful pie charts of the centers, and even possibly drawing them ourselves. And then to discuss any questions we might have and insights with your journey group. And if the study of centers isn't new, been in the work for a while, what is coming to meet you in a new way as we study again? And how are you being called to work on the side of being now? And for everyone, to observe if and how emotions are interfering with a task at hand. And so I can say right now that I feel like my emotions are, or my sensations in my body are interfering somewhat. But oh well, that's the way it is. So who would like to share about what you experienced this week? Please raise your hand. Billy, please.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Bev, and thank you, Marianne. I had a very interesting experience in how emotions interfere. On Monday night, I was really having a lot of trouble sleeping. I just couldn't go to sleep for whatever reason. And so I got up and I was just decided to browse through Facebook and see what my friends had posted that day. And I had actually posted something earlier. I don't remember if it was that day or the day before. There was a pretty benign post. It wasn't political. There wasn't anything about it. It was just talking about how neutrality was not the same as equanimity. And to my surprise, a friend of mine had a very strong reaction to that and made a post about how my interest in Tibet and causes around free Tibet were not relevant in the United States, and that I basically should be focusing my energies on something more relevant like Black Lives Matter. Well, this was at 3 a.m. when I was reading that. I was really tired. So my body was, I didn't have energy to fight, which is a good thing. But my emotional reaction, immediate reaction was, you know, hands on hips, how dare you, kind of a reaction. But because it was 3 a.m., luckily, I knew that wasn't a good time to be responding to anybody. Mm-hmm. So I waited. And the next day, I thought, well, I will reread this and see if I still have that same reaction. And I did. And so I'll read it to Brad and see if, because sometimes, you know, I overreact. So I read it to him and he had this, he was just like, whoa. So I thought, okay, it's not just me. But I was, rather than using my emotions to respond, I sat and thought about what I really wanted from this. Why did I want to respond and what did I hope to get out of responding? So I did craft a response and basically just said, you know, this person is an incredible human being. It's a guy, it's a young guy, and he is probably has defended more women and taking up the cause of women's rights more than any man or woman I know in my life, among other many, many causes. He's very, very active at trying to point out social injustices, no matter where they occur. So I just started there and said how much I really appreciated everything that he did and how much I admired his persistence and his tenacity. around these causes. And then I just said, I take issue with your statement that my passion for Tibet and for causes about Tibet are not relevant. I believe we are all one, and illuminating any causes of injustice anywhere in the world helps to illuminate it at home, right under our noses. And that's basically all I said. A couple days went by and I thought, uh-oh. And the greatest thing happened was he came back and he hit the like button on my mm-hmm. response. So to me, that was a huge moment of understanding how if I had responded to him from my emotional center, which was certainly not, it was the wrong part of that center to be coming from, it would have resulted in an entirely different scenario. And as it is, it's great. Everything is fine and wonderful. And he spoke his truth and I spoke mine, and it's fantastic.
That's great. So how did your body feel differently between 3 a.m. and then when you sent the response? What was different?
Well, I was still really tired because I was still only operating on about 3 hours sleep. But shifting centers, shifting from emotional to really a higher intellectual place, mm-hmm. Just felt lighter. My body felt lighter.
Yeah.
I didn't feel, I loved in the Lexio Divina reading just now about the finer energies in the higher places and the dense. And that's how it felt to me at 3 a.m. was dense, very heavy, immovable. Whereas because I let it rest, because I really just didn't have the energy to deal with it, it just felt way different to come from that higher intellectual place. It felt like that finer energy that Marian read about.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. When we can, and I heard also in your report, external considering mm-hmm. that you got to that place of remembering who he was, the place that you know him from, of well, how you know him mm-hmm. in a more positive way. Mm-hmm. And that was really, I heard that as a kind of a deeper part of the emotional center that you remembered, you know, you could access that part, your mm-hmm. caring about him and understanding him more.
So. Yeah. And I admit that I get very confused about these parts of centers and whether it's the intellectual part of the emotional or the emotional part of the intellectual, it's like, you know, it just becomes real heady and analytic for me. So I just,
yeah.
You know, in some ways, I just have to not go there.
Right, right. Yeah, it's easy to understand when we're reacting, where that's usually from the outer parts of centers, you know, that the usual mechanicality. So that's not where you were when you sent the email. So
no, that's where I was at 3 a.m.
Right. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Frank, please. No, is Frank gone?
Frank, can you unmute?
Let's see.
Am I unmuted?
Yep, oh, there you go.
Yeah. I am?
You're on.
As I focused on centers and how I used centers, some things became very, very clear that I don't think were as clear before approaching it this way. And largely they were when Frank's not asleep, he's pretty much always going to an attractive center. He rarely focuses and directs his attention like it needs to be in order to engage higher intellectual and higher emotional center. And the result is that much of what Frank does is formatory. But by seeing that, I became so much more conscious about the term directed attention and the need for this one to remember what is your attention on?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? What center should you be using? And I think that that has to be directed in just picking the center or being conscious of the center. Because I tend to just live in the formatory centers, both emotional and intellectual. And I think it's my lazy eyes are very strong. And I've had them a long time, nourished them. And now when they're called out, they have a lot of denial. Frank, you're getting old, you need to rest. And stuff like that. It is obviously false. They're grabbing the microphone when the effort is being made to direct my attention away from them and into the parts of centers that I need, whether it's the higher part of the intellectual center in work, or whether it's the higher part of the emotional center in recognizing feelings that lead to intuition. Because when I do that, I have really good intuition. I anticipate things that just floor me, but don't do it often enough. And I attribute that to my curse of laziness and addiction to attractive attention. So this one is going to be asking himself on repeatedly, what, are you coasting, sleeping? Or is there some direction that you want? Is there something that you think you need to use? Well, what is it? And apply it. And I thought the homework was very helpful. Attractive, the difference in this one between attractive and directed attention has been clouded. And it buried it. And it was lightning. And thank you.
Yeah, that's good. And I love, the diagrams, Michael's diagram of attention, and that question of what am I paying attention to? We're paying every time we attend to something, and you think of what we're paying with, what do we want to pay to, is another way of putting your question. So thank you for that. Thank you. Hayden, please. Hayden Brooks.
Okay, I have it on mute. Oh, Emma.
Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
So last Friday morning, after the work class was sort of fresh on my mind, I was going for a walk around Town Lake and started my walk and was in my moving center and thinking about being in my moving center, and then thinking, well, I'd like to be in higher centers, so started looking around and seeing beauty everywhere, looking at birds and the trees and feeling lighter. And I came around the corner in a place around where there's like a little pedestrian bridge and there's a planter. And sitting on a bench there, there was an African-American fellow, and he was sitting there and he had one shoe off and his leg was crossed over the other one. And so I walked up to him and I said, you know, is there something wrong? You know, can I help you? You know, is there something wrong with your foot? And he said, no, you know, I just wanted to take my shoe off. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, I felt very awkward there for a moment. I was like, well, I wish I had a Band-Aid. You know, I kind of wasn't really listening to him. And I was like, it's fine. It's fine. And then we started talking and about how much we enjoyed being around the lake. And he asked me what parts of the lake I liked. And he told me that he likes to be all over the lake. And then the conversation went too well. Yeah, sometimes I come to the lake and, you know, I can work out problems. And he said, yeah, I've been working out some problems. There's some people in my life that, you know, are problematic for me. They're not really good for me. And I said, well, you know, yeah, you know, sometimes we have to love people from a distance. I said, sometimes that's what we need to do. Like I had to do that with my mother for a while. I had to be distant from her. And he said, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, we need to let them know that we have their back, that we're there for them if they need us. And I said, yes. I said, you're a very wise person. Your loved ones are really lucky to have you in their life. And I can't recall it. At some point in the conversation, he said something about God. But after I said that, he said, well, actually, my loved ones aren't here in Austin. He said, I don't really have it. My grandchildren, I haven't seen for 8 years. And I said, well, where are they? And he said, they're in Nacogdoches. And I said to him, well, you know, I'm going to spend the rest of my walk here with a wish that you get to have a reunion with your grandchildren. And I'm going to wish that for you. Oh, and it's earlier on, we had introduced ourselves. I said, you know, my name is Lynn. Normally I would shake your hands, but there's this pandemic and his name was Mo. And so at the end of the conversation, you know, I said, I'm going to repeat this wish for you around the rest of my walk around the lake. I'm going to wish that you connect with your grandchildren. And he thanked me and I said, you know, you have been a blessing for me in this moment, in this time, that you would be so present and so available to me. And I am so grateful to you. And then he said something similar and then I laughed and I spent the rest of my walk with a sort of a mantra saying, you know, I wish for Mo to reconnect with his grandchildren. I wish for Mo to reconnect with his grandchildren. And anyway, I think if I had not intentionally gotten into a higher center, you know, instead of my typical walk is sometimes I talk on the phone. You know, I try to be present, but I'm not, you know, intentionally trying to be in a higher center. I think if I hadn't been, I wouldn't have been drawn into this conversation that felt very holy and understand. I walk around the lake. I jog around the lake a lot and I encounter, you know, African-American folks going the other way. I mean, there's several of them that we always hi and, you know, acknowledge each other. But lately there's also been definitely a feeling of awkwardness, a looking away, a turning away, body language is awkward and different. And I think if I hadn't been intentionally wanting to be in a higher place, and then being just naturally drawn into this conversation with this person who was so, it was such a heart conversation, it wouldn't have happened, is all I can say. And I felt very blessed by that opportunity. And so thank you. Thanks to the Lord for that.
It's beautiful. And I'm sure that he felt the same way. You blessed him with your openness and expressions of love. I only wish that I can do that someday. It's beautiful. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Jackie, please.
Well, it's...
Or Jack. Jack, I'm not hearing you.
Hear me?
Now I can. No. Mm-mm.
Hey, let's see.
There you go. Nope. It went away.
Now? Maybe it's because I have my iPhone open, too. Because I wanted to read something.
Ah.
So, 4 o'clock, I was in tears because a friend had texted about the recent police murder, and it was my intellectual center that was interfering with my emotional center. Mm. So if I'm reading this, is it screwing it up?
Now I can hear you. That's good.
And this is what I wrote, and it's just an emotional plea from a cop. Allowing me to share my feelings is going to be quite cathartic and a bit lengthy. I was raised by a mom and dad who didn't have a bigoted bone in their bodies. They both taught English as a second language in the barrio in San Antonio in their off hours. It wasn't until my dad died that I learned he was raised by a grand dragon by the KKK. He was taken to a cross burning in Fredericksburg by his dad when he was 14. When African Americans were first allowed to sit anywhere on a bus, yes, I was around then, there was a discussion at a relative's house as to how horrible that was. On the drive home, my dad made it so clear that that was not our family's sentiment. He made it really clear. It just stayed that way. Thanks, Mom and Dad. Part two, I became a highway patrolman at age 20, too young for sure, and although I heard snips of racism among other recruits and instructors, it was negligible. I commuted from San Antonio to Austin with Adolph Thomas, who would become the first African-American highway patrolman ever. He knocked me out cold in a boxing match during training. I have the picture. My first sergeant, Homer Spellman, began in the 30s, patrolling on a Harley-Davidson with a .357 Magnum revolver, 12 rounds of ammo, and a pair of handcuffs. When he arrested a drunk, he had to put him on the back of a Harley to take him to jail. I drove a Plymouth Fury 3, had the same equipment plus a shotgun in a rack and a two-way radio, no walkie-talkie. What I have seen since 1968 is a militarization of the police to a wretched state it has become. Combined with the over-the-top production of cop movies such as Dirty Harry and their ilk and gratuitously gory video games seem to have worked hand in hand to enable a fast-moving train wreck we now call law enforcement. I'm proud of the work I did in uniform and out of uniform. As an undercover narc, I was an equal opportunity drug buyer. There was an unwritten law understood by and subscribed by almost all cops and robbers. We will not treat you ill, set you up, or entrap you, and you won't kill or injure us. Worked out pretty good for a few exceptions, but my heart breaks when I see what has developed. My heart is heavy on both counts. Adolf passed away a few years back. I spoke with his widow, who was delighted to tell me that Adolf had that photo of him knocking me cold on his office wall. That was the kind of friends we were and are. That's my emotion, a higher part of my emotional center, grieving where we are today. Where we are today. And I am so blessed for the work that allowed me to reveal these things and share them.
Thank you, Jack. You have a unique perspective on this, having come from that yourself. So thank you. Catherine Swan.
Can you unmute yourself, Catherine?
Muted.
There you go.
There we go. Thank you. Oh, gosh. I'm very moved by Jack sharing. You know, it's interesting. I wasn't going to say this part, but I'd like to, that, you know, we're, this month, we're talking about purgation. And to me, you know, that's the purification of the emotional body. And, you know, I've had an emotional meltdown this week as well, about feeling that I have been vindicated around protesting the Vietnam War, you know, that I wasn't a horrible communist that deserved to be shot or and tear gassed, which I was. But so there's a, I just feel Jack just so opened my heart. I just felt like I wanted to share that. But really what I wanted to share initially was, my heart is also full of so much compassion for the new people who are coming into the work and plowing through these incredible emails that we get and learn, you know, and they're really having to lean in so deeply on the side of knowledge right now. And I wanted to share an experience that I had as to how this knowledge eventually just drops into something more intuitive in our lives. And what my first experience was I was walking along one day and I saw a piece of trash on the ground. And first of all, there was this kind of this judgment. Well, I wonder who did that. That's very thoughtless. And then, you know, my emotional self was kind of like, you know, we just don't love our earth right. We just don't love her right. Here, we just look at this. And then it was a matter of, was my moving body going to reach down and pick it up? And there was a huge resistance. And I, but that's what really, that was kind of the wake up call when I felt the resistance to make the effort myself to reach down and pick up that piece of trash, which I did. And it sort of took my intellect and my emotional body awareness center to hear where the, remember where the work talks about, like at that time, my moving center was like being the rogue elephant, was being didn't want to participate. It didn't want to do its part, where the other two centers come in, you know, and help take care of this rogue elephant. That's sort of what happened when, you know, the body reached down and picked up this piece of trash. And so it's just kind of interesting how just being aware that the mind, the body has its own mind, the heart has its own mind, and our intellect has its own mind. And just to kind of keep an eye on them, see who's running the show and where's our awareness. It just becomes, you know, the knowledge does eventually drop more into our intuitive self, it seems. So that's what I wanted to share. And I'd like to thank my work partner because she kind of wanted me to share tonight, which sometimes I'm too shy. Just another eye. Thank you so much for calling on me, Beverly.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Catherine. It's a good reminder to it. It just takes a while, and I remember having that same experience. Of all of a sudden, it was available to me. You know, remember when Donald would do the class, and he would say, "And this is, you know, like waiting for us to answer," and I'd be like, and then all of a sudden, one year, it was like, bing, there they were. It was, the knowledge was there. We just keep reading it and opening ourselves to it. It comes eventually. Mm-hmm. So thank you. And we'll end with Beth. This part.
Okay, am I unmuted?
You are.
All right. So I was paying particular attention to my emotional center this week. And because it has felt fairly dormant. And, you know, I was kind of exploring some reasons for that. I'm semi-retired, and so I'm not out in the world as much. And so, you know, so there's not so many situations or things that might trigger a reaction in me. And also, my work involves working with other people around their emotions. And I realized that part of my training in that is to mediate emotions through the intellectual center. And so it's kind of what I do with myself, too. And so I was really trying to pay attention to my emotional center. And where I got really triggered was watching the protest. And there was something that I watched that just triggered so much anger and outrage. And I just allowed that feeling to be there and also ask for help. And because I really don't want to go around being outraged all the time. It's not a happy feeling. And so I asked for help. And what I realized is that the outrage moved into grief, and that behind the outrage was just this deep grief. And the grief is not just for one set of people. The grief is for everyone. It's for the people who, individuals who have lost sight of their humanity, the point that they can push over a 75-year-old man and then walk away. And it's for George Floyd, and it's for all of the, it's for everyone. And so it felt like that was a higher emotional center reaching down to me. And I thank you for it.
Yeah. Thank you. I can't imagine going through this time without these tools. You're such a gift. Thank you, Beth. All right, well, thank you all for sharing, and for those of you who didn't get to, we know that you have gifts to give us too. So I'm going to share my screen for the next part here. Okay, we did that. So I wanted to go back to this image, and again, our reading from tonight, the first part. For now I see through a glass darkly, but then shall I know face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as I am known. And the emotional center speaks in the language of images. And I just find this so beautiful. It just speaks to me of higher centers. And have you ever had that experience where maybe it's right after centering prayer in the morning? I've read something really inspiring after having some caffeine. And I sit there and I just imagine, what would it be like? What would it be like to live life without all these overcoats, without the preferences, the associations, the thoughts, beliefs, everything that's been acquired? Now, what would that be like? And it's like sometimes there's this extremely thin veil, and I can just see through it, you know, and I feel into it, but I can't stay there. But those kinds of experiences just give me hope and verify the fact that something higher is there, that world exists, that this beautiful image is the reality of us. Of course, I'll never be able to look at that now without seeing owl eyes. It's beautiful, though. I mean, it's just so beautiful. So, yeah. And that's when we can access those higher centers. Then we know face to face. We'll get to see reality as it is in all its beauty and wonder, no matter what's happening. It's just amazing. So we kind of went through all this, but we'll go through this quickly. And I'm just going to kind of riff off the email from today. So what are higher centers? So they're distinct from our lower centers, from the lower emotional, intellectual, and moving centers. And this part, someone shared that higher emotional is the seat of conscience and the organ of individuality. I was also very intrigued by that and wondered very much about that as well. Something definitely to ponder. And that higher intellectual center puts us in touch with cosmic principles. So to me, it's one of those things to understand. This is not to think about it, but it's to really open to it, like in Lexio, make it a Lexio, conscience and the organ of individuality. What can that mean for me, for us? And that these two higher centers are fully developed and they're constantly working, but we don't hear them. Their vibrations are very fine. It's the still small voice that we just can't hear because of all the debris that's in our lower centers, all those overcoats we have on, all of our acquired conscience and everything we've learned in our upbringing that blocks us from hearing those. And unless these lower centers are developed, are purified, we aren't able to hear those messages that come through that are just streaming from the higher levels of consciousness. Now, we've all had the experience of hearing them, I believe. And so, you know, our beings change from moment to moment. And David Hawkins' scale of consciousness is very, very clear. Clearly shows how that's the case, and you can see how we move. Billy described it well in her share in the beginning. And again, the higher can perceive and comprehend the lower, but the lower can't. When we're in those lower levels of consciousness, we can't feel into the upper very easily. But when we're in the higher, we just feel, I don't know, when I'm feeling in a higher place in myself, I can feel compassion and understanding for everything that's going on in the world. I can see myself in it all. I can see that it all is in me. And there's no real difference between them and me you know, and what's going on. And I guess if we're living in, literally living in the higher centers, then it's even beyond, way beyond that. So how does the work help us to open the lower centers to the higher centers? The key to this is metanoia, that changing the way we think, changing, as Father Keating says, the direction in which we're looking for happiness. And that happens through the inner parts of centers, through the intellectual parts of the centers, the deepest parts. And when we're there, when we can access those, we learn to easily question the beliefs that we have, all those pictures and assumptions and associations. And we drop more into a place of wonder, of openness, of receptivity. So, you know, is what I'm believing in this moment, is this true? You know, and who am I? Who would I be without my story about the world, without my story about other people, without my story about myself? And that is the path, one of the paths to purifying the emotional center, to aligning the different parts of the centers in the intellectual center to work correctly. So through that, the work prepares and develops our lower centers. And as these inner parts of centers begin to see all these new truths about ourselves, about others, and about life overall, that's the emotional center starts to begin to be purified. And all that density, all the dense vibrations that are keeping us stuck in our patterns begin to dissolve, or at least new neural pathways are starting to be made. As when the light is shined on those things, those patterns, those, just that patterning we've had from childhood, then we start clearing. We start taking off the overcoats. The post-its are gone from other people. And we begin to see with more clarity and feel with more clarity. And so, as we said before, that when the emotional center becomes purified, then we can begin to get help. We can really be helped and receive influences of a new kind. And when we do, we start gaining so much understanding, so much more than we had before. Our thinking, our consciousness expands. And I know all of us have had that experience. Someone just spoke about thinking back to who you used to be before you came into the work and who you are now. And the difference is just so vast, so vast. And even those of you who are new, you can feel your consciousness starting to expand as you engage these work ideas and to work on the side of knowledge and being. And of course, this always brings us back to the beginning, middle, and end of the journey, is the importance of self-observation and our capacity to self-observe and non-identify, and of course self-remember. We have to be able to see, we have to be able to use our attention to observe ourselves, to see what these things are doing, and to remember that that's not us. It's just an interesting creature that we're observing and all the things that it does. How funny, you know, we're just funny creatures. We are. And so that self-observation is key. It's absolutely key to the whole process. So as we self-observe and we then engage with the normal functions of our three centers, all parts of the centers are useful. They all have a purpose. They serve a purpose, even the outer parts. And so they, as we observe, as the emotional center becomes purified, then everything clicks into place. Everything works in the right way. We use the right part of the center or the right center for the right task. Not the emotional center when we should be using the intellectual center or vice versa. And so that moves us towards becoming much more balanced, a balanced human, or as the work calls man number four, balanced human instead of mechanical humanity of one, two, and three. And then, I mean, we move towards that, the beauty of the kingdom of heaven or the conscious circle of humanity, number five, six, and seven beings. And in that place, we're told that those beings can understand one another. They're not based on violence. And they have the ability and the power to live more or less in the higher emotional and higher intellectual centers. And they've been purified. That kenosis, that inner self-emptying has taken place to a great extent. And they are pure vessels for spirit, for inspiration they are the higher levels, but who knows from beyond that. And they are moved. They are just moved. Now, I still believe that energies will rise and energies will go away, but there's nothing for it to get stuck on. And so we become just able to be moved and not get stuck in, ooh, maybe I shouldn't say. When I think of that, I mean, often when I think of oh, yes, I want to be moved, and then it's like, ooh, that's scary, because I might have to do what, you know, what's it scared of? So obviously the lower can't perceive or understand the higher in that case. But to live like that is just sounds like a blessing. And that's what I was saying, that I can sense into that, that part, when the veil parts, that what life must be like. And what freedom there must be in that. So as we participate in our school and become more purified, as our centers become purified, as we become more able to hear those messages from higher, or that the still small voice is clearer to us, then and through our work in the community, then we move towards the purpose of all of this, is that we receive the higher influences in order so that they can be transmitted for the healing of humanity and for the healing of our planet and all of creation. It's not about us anymore. It's about, personally us. It's about the big us. It's about the cosmic us. And that's what we move towards here. That's what we're working towards in this school. And we create this amazing accumulator of energy that radiates out to the world and is such a healing presence. And we can feel that even through the technology. And we have to believe that it is a blessing to the world, our work. And I just wanted to end with this beautiful quote from the email, it's just kind of says it all. If we approach the work with a sense of beauty, wonder, appreciation, and a deep wish for what it has to offer, if we persevere in allowing ourselves to be nourished by the teachings with openness and goodwill, if we try to connect the ideas for ourselves through memory and thought, the work becomes an energetic light skeleton, a field within our being. And remember, 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 remember why you are in the work. And I was so, there was something in that image of light skeleton, which I thought was very beautiful. It's a beautiful image, and it goes beyond. It's like not this little skeleton, but this. So that's all I have at the moment. And I'll stop my screen share. There we go. Would anyone like to share before we go, before I share the homework? Anything that touched you in that, or any questions, any more reflections on the centers?
Hey, Beverly, can I say something?
Yes,
please. As you were reviewing the teachings and going back to Anna's original question, about the organ of individuality and conscious, what came to me is the word destiny. Mm. That each of us has, we are here for a purpose. And that purpose can more clearly manifest when there is purgation, purification, illumination. Mm-hmm. And to me, that does speak of how conscience and the organ of individuality manifest as the higher emotional center, as the purpose of it, that then the destiny comes forth.
Yes.
So that's the hypothesis that I'm working with that came to me as you were reviewing all of that. And I also think that image really helped to bring it all in. So I'm just going to be sitting with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Rusty or Sue?
Yes, it's Sue, actually. I have a question. So when we're talking about higher emotional and intellectual centers, and I'm thinking about the charts from last week about the three parts of each center. So like higher emotional center, is that just part of our emotional center that's a higher part or a more, less dense part of that center? And it's just, I'm getting it's a little confusing about, or is it like, so then I also hear about talk about like higher influences. So higher emotional and intellectual center, that's part of us. Is that correct? It's not like something else.
Yes, the way I see it, it's like our connection to higher consciousness and higher influences that comes through our higher centers, and they, you know, the charts have them outside of our centers, but you know, again, that's a conceptual picture. And so, but technically, I guess that the higher emotional center is connected with the emotional center and the intellectual to the higher intellectual to our intellectual center. And if you think of the higher emotional center being conscience, feeling all together. Real conscience, mm-hmm. and intellectual center, connecting us with cosmic principles. It can kind of feel into those two things, how they're connected, but they're beyond our normal mm-hmm. emotional and intellectual centers. And I remember Donald positing one time that there has to be a higher moving center as well. Uh-huh. But there's nothing said about that in the work. It's an interesting thing to ponder. But is that clear?
Yeah, I think that's helping. And also, for some reason, I'm thinking about the, you know, Tim used to bring the dog ball in all the time, and it was sort of an illustration of how we are connected to this bigger whole thing. Each of us has a little connection to this bigger yeah. energy, this bigger consciousness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. We're going to end with Anna because we're kind of at time here. Anna, did you have, I have a feeling you want to respond to.
Wow, that's really feeling it together. I also had the same, something came to me as you were teaching, in that there was a teaching, I believe it's in the work as well as in Bernadette, as in the community reading. It just dawned on me that the order of individuality is our own journey. We have to make it. Mm-hmm. We have to make it on our own. It feels that way to me. That's the order of individuality. But it does start from that magnetic center. And I believe the magnetic center is within the higher emotional center. And from there, we can, that is our journey that we have to take. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. There's so much here, and there's so much the teaching from all of you. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go back to sharing the screen and our homework. So our homework for this week is, from a sense of beauty and valuation, let us think quietly and internally about one or two of the ideas that belong to the system of teaching and follow a train of thought about them and make connections between them. This is a really fun exercise. Every single one of these ideas connect to the other. It's just this beautiful web. And so it's a really good task for the attention as well. Try to know and understand that higher emotional center and higher intellectual are always there, always transmitting their influences. We only have to allow them to be heard. Our work is principally to remove the obstacles or allow them to be removed by the grace of the Holy Spirit. And again, remember why we are in the work. And you might want to just ponder that. Your memory, what brought you to it? Why are you here? And what is your work now? Thank you all very much. Marianne, thank you.
Can you stop sharing, Beverly?
Oh, yep, sorry.
It's wonderful. Thank you. A closing word from Rodney Collin. We may feel that we are not helping someone, but how do we know if we are or not? Even if we cannot think of anything to say, how do we know that our smile, just listening with attention, is not help? Probably when we can think of nothing to say, when we feel most helpless, we are helping the most. For then we pray to our Lord to help through us. Let us join together in praying aloud the prayer of God's love. God's love has met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen. Good night, everyone.